broadcasting from Nashville Guitar Store in the heart of Music City, USA. Bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. Sharing tales of their history, discussing guitars, their gear, their work, what's on tap for the future, and delivering wisdom we'll all appreciate. Your host is Marcia Ware, nationally recognized radio personality, singer, actor, and author.
Greg Hagen is our guest on the show today. He has worked with the likes of Little Big Town, Jordan Sparks, Matt Kearney, Mandisa, Avalon, and he is currently out on the road with the great Leanne Rimes, one of my favorite voices, one of my favorite talents. He's got some TV track credits. Now, stop me if I've misquoted anything, Greg. I've got Coming Home. Your music has been featured on that show for Lifetime, and Sons of Guns.
That is correct.
Ah, okay. And on a personal note, he is a worship leader at his home church here in Nashville, Tennessee, with his wife Ashley, the lovely, gorgeous, just so, oh so fabu, one of my favorite people, and beautiful children as well. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. You have been one of my ungettable gets for a while, so I'm really excited that you're here. Why don't we just like always to start at the beginning. You are originally from where?
I'm originally from Florida, born and raised in Florida. I moved around a lot as a child, which either means your dad was incarcerated or he was a church pastor.
We're going to err on the side of church pastor.
Yeah, and there's a small distinction between the two.
Teeny tiny.
He was Assembly of God pastor, and so I grew up in church in Florida. It was an interesting mix. Mostly hymns in church.
Ah.
So I was looking all over the place for musical inspiration from other sources, you know.
Radio, records,
yeah,
any place you can get it.
Any place, and it was highly controlled. You know, my parents were very intent and intentional about what they would allow me to listen to. So my dad had this awesome story. My dad had this huge music library from when, I guess they were first married. They signed up for probably Columbia or something.
Oh, those Columbia. Yeah, I love those. So 45 records for like a penny.
Yeah, that kind of deal. So they did this in like 68, 69, a couple years before I was born, and so it was like 80% classical, and then there was a few like Perry Como and, you know, crooner types. And so I would pick through the classical and find a couple of things, but one day I was flipping through and I found a 3-record set of Diana Ross and the Supremes. And I was like, oh, Dad's listening to secular music.
Ooh,
what's happening?
That's the same thing happened to me when I found my Gladys Knight record at my grandpa's house.
Uh-oh.
Ooh, what up with that?
You know, you go stay at a friend's house, and they turn you on to Jimi Hendrix and The Who and Led Zeppelin and all that kind of stuff. And then you stay with another friend, and you hear current. So, you know, I was thinking about it actually on the drive here, and I was thinking, like, you know, with an artist, it's the way they see things is different from the way other people see things.
Yeah.
They see things, and then they know how to create to help you see that same thing.
Interesting.
I was thinking about with a musician, it's the way we hear things.
Mm-hmm.
We hear things differently, and then through the instrument, through the voice, we know how to help you hear too. You know?
That is so,
I was so
cool.
About that. So for me, it's like I got blues inspiration from a hymn. But because there was one hymn that had a little blue note written in.
Yeah.
He set me free, yes.
Yeah.
And that's the actual note.
Yeah.
It's written in there.
Yeah.
But somehow from that, I drew an inspiration of the blues and got interested in blues. So I went through a whole period of, like, you know, getting into the blues. And so it's just interesting. You hear things differently. And so you can be inspired by lots of different things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I do today is just...
That is crazy cool.
Just listen.
Yeah, that is crazy cool. How old were you the first time you ever picked up a guitar?
Oh, wow. It's my grandfather on my dad's side. He had an acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he could play some chords. And so he would let all the grandkids play it when we'd come over.
Oh.
And we had to play it sitting in the lap and just kind of plunk it around with it. We had to be very careful because this instrument was, like, really special, you know? Like, they kind of didn't... They treated it like it was this work of art rather than an instrument.
Okay.
But it developed an early love for the guitar. And
is
I
that
was
does that
to find it.
Does it still exist?
Yep, my brother has it.
Wow.
It's just a cheap Crown. It's a Crown guitar. Needs some work done on it.
Right.
Maybe we can talk later. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll cut you a deal. Hey, so your brother, does he play? Are you the only musician in the family?
He plays as well. He sings, he writes, he plays drums, he plays a little bit of keyboard and strums that guitar that we grew up strumming.
And he still doesn't play it the way does he still play it on the lap?
He's slightly better than that.
Fling, 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 fling.
But he had, it's interesting, you know, just I was referencing earlier about just your musical ear. He actually had that earlier than I did.
Okay.
You know, like we'd be in the car and the family, we just kind of family sing. You know, you see like the Griswolds singing songs or whatever. We actually did that.
Yeah.
And
the Weirs did too.
Yeah, all of a sudden he just starts singing harmony.
Wow. And is he older or younger?
He's younger. Okay. A couple years younger. So okay. I was always jealous of that. Like, like there's these other notes that are cool too, and I couldn't hear those.
Yeah.
So I was a lead singer, you know.
You mentioned your musical background, lots and lots of gospel, teeny tiny bit of Diana Ross in there, but you gleaned it from outside sources. Once you started listening to those outside sources, who was really staying with you? What was sticking to you?
It was always a number of different things, which I think is what helped me, you know, become a recording musician, be a good sideman, is that it was never too deeply one thing. Mm-hmm. But early on, it seems obvious as a guitar player, but when I actually heard Eddie Van Halen's Eruption, I remember the bedroom. I was at my friend's house. We were listening to music, and he said, "Hey, let's go across the street and see if Tommy's home." And I said, "Oh, Tommy? Yeah." And so we go across the street. His friend Tommy played guitar. And So I'm in sixth grade, and here I've been strumming on Granddaddy's old guitar, but here's a guy with an electric guitar.
Oh, rock. Okay.
And so he starts tapping out part of Eddie Van Halen's Eruption. So I'd never heard Eruption before. I'd never heard Eddie Van Halen before.
Okay.
At all. And here's some guy doing, you know, with tapping on the guitar and making these wonderful violin kind of arpeggios that are so smooth. I didn't even know the guitar could do that. And I go, "That's amazing. How do you do that?" He goes, "It's just Eddie Van Halen's Eruption." I go, "Hold on, Eddie Van Halen, Eruption." He goes, "Yeah, you haven't heard that?" So we went back across the street to my friend's house, and we listened to all of that Van Halen record, and I just couldn't believe that the guitar could make that sound. It was amazing. So Eddie Van Halen, but I never really could play like it.
Right.
So, but Eddie Van Halen, and then later that same summer, Jimi Hendrix. And then within a year, it was Jimmy Page with Led Zeppelin, and it just... From Jimi Hendrix, I got just this very expressive, emotional, heart on the sleeve way of playing. From Jimmy Page, I got this very aggressive and angst, but highly orchestrated way of layering guitar parts. And from Eddie Van Halen, I think I didn't really get anything that I could play because it was always so unreachable for me. But I just loved it. But so it was always classic rock. It was blues. Later it was R&B, but and gospel was all in there.
Has your love of like a certain kind of guitar evolved over the years, or are you pretty brand specific
As far as like
type of guitar?
Wow. I've never, because it was interesting that the Fender Stratocaster is originally what inspired me, because I saw my friend playing it,
right?
And I always wanted one, and so when we went to buy my first electric guitar, my dad was going to pay for it, but then have me pay part of it back so that I was investing with him. And so we went to get one at one of these big monster blowout sales where you line up, and there's one Fender Stratocaster somewhere hidden in the store at that amazing price, and everybody there with a black concert t-shirt, faded jeans with holes in it, and mullet hair, we're all going for that guitar. And so I did not get that guitar. But I found like a 70, 71, 72 Les Paul Tobacco Sunburst.
Okay.
Like one of the ones Jimmy Page would play.
Right.
And that's what we bought. Wow. And that guitar, and this could be selective memory, because it later got stolen. Sad story.
Uh-huh.
This could be selective memory, but I'm pretty sure that is the best feeling guitar I've ever played in terms of the action, the fret, the neck, everything about it. And I bonded with that. So since then, I've never had a Fender Strat. I've got a Telecaster, but since then, it's pretty much been Gibsons. So I ended up getting a Les Paul. But yeah. My favorite guitar right now is it's just a Gibson SG.
Okay.
And it's a 61 reissue. Mm-hmm. It's been on the road. It looks like it's a vintage guitar. People always ask me, oh, what year is that? And I'll say, it's a 61. They go, oh, wow. I said, and I'll be like, reissue. And they're like, really? It's all messed up.
You've just totally blown the horizon.
Yeah, your stuff, like if your stuff isn't scratched up, you haven't been on the road.
Sorry. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Sorry.
If it doesn't look like crud. So, who was the first national artist you ever toured with?
It was Aaron Jeffrey and Greg Long. And that was after a long period of being in Nashville and being like feeling like completely locked out of this town.
Yeah.
I mean, auditions, free yeah. sessions, anybody, coffee house, anything.
Yeah.
Just feeling like I couldn't get going. And I finally got recommended by David Cleveland, who's another amazing guitar player.
Another one I got to get in here. I'm bound and determined.
And so we went to church together, and he had assessed my play and got to know me a little bit. He's mm-hmm. like, we need to get you a gig. And so he recommended me, and it was Aaron Jeffrey's first solo tour, and
yeah.
Greg Long opening. So I played for both bands, and it was short, but it was a lot of fun.
Let's talk gear. Some people just love pedal board extravaganza. Mm-hmm. Some people like to keep it simple. Where are you in there? Are you
I'm
a gear
sort of right in the middle.
Okay.
Because I mentioned earlier that I think the thing about being a musician is it's the way you hear.
Mm-hmm.
And the guitar can be, to other people, it can be a work of art.
Mm-hmm.
To us, it is something to play. So, like, with gear, it's like you have to find the gear that helps you to play the way you hear.
Okay.
And so you see guys, they're constantly swapping out pedals, constantly swapping out amps. They're constantly, and I think they're probably searching for that thing that sounds like they hear in their head.
Yeah.
That's probably what they're searching for.
Okay.
For me, I found it pretty early on. It's okay. Like Jimmy Page sounds awesome with a Les Paul. Now, on his recordings, a lot of Telecaster. But he sounds great with Les Paul. AC/DC, the Young Brothers, sounded great with a Les Paul and a Marshall amp. So basically, if I had to strip everything I do down, it's probably... It's the sound that I'm most going for is a Gibson guitar with a 60s model Marshall amp.
Okay.
The Blues Breaker combo they've got is great. What I use is just a 50-watt Plexi. It's a reissue.
Okay.
I don't even have the original thing. It's not even hand-wired, but it sounds like that. And then use the pedal board to basically push that into overdrive a little bit more and work with that sound. So.
Okay.
So there's some toys on the pedal board, but it's very meat and potatoes, and then like here's some reverb, here's some delay, and I can do all that effect thing that everyone likes to do, but at the heart of it has to be that guitar, your hands, the guitar, and that amp. Those three things have to be right or you're not going to stand out.
Right. So you have expressed your love for the Les Paul and most things Gibson. Is that what you use to write with when you're doing songwriting?
No, when I'm writing songs, it's acoustic guitar or the piano. There's something about just, I don't know, there's something, like I've tried writing on the electric guitar, and what I end up doing is writing what I think is a cool guitar riff. But that's not a song.
Right.
So then I try to take, like collaborate with somebody and like, I got this cool riff. And more often than not, that does not develop into a good song.
Yeah.
So it usually works better for me if I get away from that side of my thinking and playing and just acoustic guitar or piano, write what I believe to be a good song, and then you can put all the fluff on it later. The last 11 years I've been in country music. And so I've had to pick up mandolin, had to pick up some banjo, some ganjo. I've had to learn how to finger pick on acoustic guitar in a variety of styles, because every genre finger picks the acoustic, but they all have a different style.
Right.
And I found out guys were like, no, that's bluegrassy. No, that's country. No, that's a rock thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's finger picking the acoustic. How many different ways? Even with R&B, I'd learned all those riffy R&B acoustic things that was so popular in late 90s, early 2000s. And I try to bring that kind of flair onto a country session, and it's like, yeah, that's, we want more of a country thing.
So working with the country artists, how flexible are they in a live situation for you to like inject that flavor?
That's a great question. I didn't grow up, one of the reasons, like bridging back to the Eddie Van Halen thing, is that I would steal little snippets of things from different ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was like, even with my love for like Jimmy Page,
mm-hmm.
I didn't learn every riff of every Led Zeppelin song. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I brought things from it. So when I became a professional musician and someone said, here's my record, I want you to play it just like the record, that actually was really hard for me.
It is.
Because I didn't know even how they were doing some of these. I'm getting into like deeper details of where you voice chords, but mm-hmm. I would hear it and I know what chord it is, but I can tell it's voiced a certain way, and it was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point after a failed audition, it was for Margaret Becker. I'll even tell you the guy that beat me out, because he's a fantastic guitar player. But so I go on this audition, and I felt that I knew it just like the record.
Yeah.
You know, I'd really, really worked hard, and I was young. My gear was not 100% together, but I did sound good, and I did have the sounds down as much as possible. And went in, I felt like I did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
I actually was able to even play and just kind of perform, and just, I thought it went well.
Yeah.
Didn't get it. And when I...
So who beat you?
Richard Thomas, or Rico.
Rico?
Yeah, Rico.
Wow, yeah. That's a name I have not heard. Wow.
Yeah, and so...
Wow.
So my cousin, who also was in Nashville a few years back, as a professional musician, pianist, he ended up getting the Margaret Becker gig.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked the drummer, who was the band leader, ask him about my audition, you know? And he said, no, your cousin did good. He's a good player, you know? I'm sure he'll get lots of work in this town. He said, but with Rico... I don't know. He wasn't even on time for his audition. He just kind of wheeled in his gear, set it up, and he didn't really know the songs very well. And he just played, and he sounded great.
Interesting.
You know? And I thought, oh, come on, man.
Okay.
I'm feeling
where you're going with this. Yeah.
And I tried to mm-hmm. learn all your songs mm-hmm. and do all your little parts. Mm-hmm. And this guy came in and just sounded great and played great, and he barely knew the songs. But he did know them.
Yeah.
And so I basically took from that of, I need to find out who Greg Hagen is as a guitar player.
Right.
And not spend time copying everybody. So that's kind of how I approached it is, so like with Little Big Town, there are some riffs on the record that had to be exact, and I would work really, really, really hard to get those exact. But I kept finding myself in situations where... people didn't have, they couldn't afford seven people in the band to cover
right.
every part.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept finding myself in the situation of having to figure out how to create an amalgamation of different parts. And so through that's how I got to be more creative and basically just play it however I wanted to.
Yeah.
So it, to this day, you know, mm-hmm. you're probably better off letting me play it how I want to.
Yeah.
It's probably going to sound better to you. But whatever he did, and didn't hear his audition, but whatever he did was right in the middle.
Yeah.
Where he knew it enough that he was playing Margaret Becker's song, and she could recognize that's the song. Whatever it is he did something that mm-hmm. told her, that's a player, you know? And so I just tried to walk that line. Like with Leanne's new record, I've heard it. There's going to be some very specific parts that mm-hmm. I'll have to learn
right.
because it's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
But with her older stuff, she doesn't want to hear it like it was 18 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago. She needs to hear it, and we actually work to get new arrangements. So it's just a good place to be.
Is there any kind of technology out there that kind of complements what you do? Are you the kind of person that looks to the future for, you know, software or technology, anything out there, gadgets or things like that that assist you in your playing or help you evolve as a player?
Yeah, I really think it's important for, even if it's just GarageBand, just to sit down and, I mean, you don't have to have Pro Tools, but
mm-hmm.
just to sit down with a beat that is static and unmoving
mm-hmm.
and it is, you know, what we would call perfect. Doesn't mean it feels great, but you're sitting down with that and play along with it, practice along with it, then go back and listen, but also visually analyze, because you can look at the waveforms
mm-hmm.
against the grid, and you can actually see where you're rushing, where you're dragging, where you don't where it doesn't feel right. And then what you hopefully find is some consistency in your pocket. But that visual aid and being able to record and listen back, man,
yeah.
I didn't grow like you. No one had recording equipment mm-hmm. when I was learning to play. It was too expensive. So mm-hmm. the best I had was my dad's old reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
And then that got hijacked because I figured out it made a really great tape delay. And he's like, son, what are you doing? You're wrecking my reel-to-reel. Use that for my sermons. I've got this cool thing. I can't, I would say the name of the product if I could think of it. But somebody has made a really, really simple, easy to use looper station pedal.
Really?
You know, those have been around for years.
Yeah.
Go Keggy's.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, the master of that. Mm-hmm. But it's something really, it just came out. It's got really tactical kind of buttons that just light up, and it makes it really, really simple. And so Leanne's producer is trying to get her to use that as a songwriting tool because, like, you
okay.
read these stories of Michael Jackson, and it's like he would make recordings of...
Okay.
That's the bass line he's
yeah.
hearing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He didn't necessarily play, but he would sing that bass line,
okay.
and,
yeah,
and
yeah.
someone would go program and create based on stuff. So he's trying to get her to use it like that. Technology, always use it as a tool. Jimmy Page, it's a funny quote... I don't know what magazine I read it in, probably Guitar Player, but he was talking about the difference between the way they had to create reverb, the way they had to create delay, all of those things they had to go through for their mixes to create all these special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it's very interesting. Everybody is always interested. It was always really hard work. So mm-hmm. like the drum sound on When the Levee Breaks has this wonderful echo that's, mm-hmm. that's it's in time mm-hmm. with the beat. And it was something they couldn't dampen the space enough, so they had to work with it.
Wow!
So the song had to be that tempo.
Okay.
You know, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
But he said nowadays you can dial up any kind of ambience you want.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm thinking, I'm all trying to get vintage and classic techniques. And here's
yeah.
the guy that had to go through all this stuff. He's saying, man, pull up a great reverb and dial up a hall
yeah.
and customize it and sound great. So it's like you always have to be looking at technology as an opportunity to grow and make things easier, but you at the same time don't lose, you know, the root. Don't you lose the Les Paul and the Marshall amp or whatever that is to you.
Yeah. That's so cool. That is good stuff. So what is your biggest challenge or drawback as an artist where you are in the season of your life and your career?
Biggest challenge? You know, it's a couple of things, you know, like the musical challenges, I put those in front of myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like I don't need to be any better of a guitar player to do the gigs I'm currently doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like I could just not improve myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I have always had this feeling that, like a shark, if you stop moving forward, you can't get oxygen. You will die.
Mm.
And like as a musician, I feel like you need to constantly be putting challenges in front of yourself. So for me, one of the challenges I'm putting in front of myself is piano playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learning to be competent mm. on the piano. I never
okay.
got there, you know.
Okay.
And then challenges in front of myself with acoustic guitar playing,
mm-hmm.
finger picking, stuff I was referencing earlier, just being really good. And,
yeah.
you know, so right now there's no need for me to get a gig that has all this intricate finger picking stuff. But maybe if I could,
yeah.
there would be that opportunity.
Okay.
But the personal challenges, I think, is just, it's related to this. But it's just like how to stay viable
mm-hmm.
as a professional musician, how to stay viable as an artist, like... You know, you get an opportunity that leads to what people would call success. How do you maintain that? You know, so I've worked with artists. Little Big Town's a great example. When I started working with them, they weren't selling any records.
Okay.
And it seemed like their career was over in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a gold record that went platinum before the year was over, and we were having parties. And then the next record. Pretty much tanked,
mm-hmm.
and it looked like their career was over again. And then they made another record, new sound, new producer, and all of a sudden a resurgence. You know, And so I got to hear a lot of conversations they were having during that time about how do we get back mm-hmm. on top? How do we, you know, find that success? And it always was about their art and their sound and the quality of their songs. It always came back to the basics. You yeah. know? It wasn't like a marketing strategy. It right. was like, we need better songs. We okay. need a better record. We need to be better, you okay. know, and just challenging themselves. So that kind of reinforced
That's
things
good.
I was feeling. So for me, it's just kind of like, where do I go from here?
Mm-hmm.
How do I maintain this? You know, I'm not going to be delivering pizzas in 5 years. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
So that's the challenge, is how do we get from here to stay at a level where I can keep doing this, making a living mm-hmm. and enjoying it, providing for a family, you know. I would always play music mm-hmm. if I weren't getting paid, you know. I would always play. I play every day.
And we will hit the pause button right there. When we come back, we'll talk about the next generation of Hagen musicians. We'll hear some very pointed and wise advice about gear, tone, and the gift of generosity. And as always, we'll get inside the fertile playground that is this musician's mind with another round of Take Your Pick. It's all coming up on the second half of our program with Greg Hagen. I'm Marcia, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
At NashvilleGuitarStore.com, paying full price for guitars is a thing of the past. Like dial-up internet. You'll find Epiphone, Fender, Gretsch, Ibanez, Taylor, and lots more. What you won't find is the big box store prices. Get yourself a killer guitar at a fraction of the retail price at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
Musical genius of Greg Hagen is what you're listening to. He's our guest this time around. Welcome to part two of our conversation with him. I'm Marcia, and you are at NashvilleGuitarStore.com.
I just think there's music that we have to make that isn't for commercial purposes. We right. have to make it. That's where worship comes in.
Yeah.
Is that's what God's made me for.
Right.
That's what He's made us for. That's why He's given us instruments and voices. The ability to do these kind of things, that's what art ultimately is it's opening up a channel to the divine, reaching up and God reaching back, giving inspiration, giving direction. So I would always have music.
Have any of your kids gotten the music bug?
Yes.
I mean, in terms of playing?
Yes. Yeah. We were talking about hearing earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of them have that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so their mom and I knew from an early age that each one of them had a musical talent.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to push them to be a virtuoso.
Right.
So we didn't like get them in lessons when they were 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But the oldest, Rachel, it seems like singing is her main thing.
Yeah.
She is taking piano lessons now, and she's making progress.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she will be, and I've told her this, I believe she will be able to accompany herself
mm-hmm.
and sing and perform and lead worship.
How old is she now?
That's her goal. She's 17.
Because she just did some serious worship leading a few weeks back,
mm-hmm.
and that's got to make you a proud papa.
It does. It's like, you know, just seeing that it's happening at the right time,
because
mm-hmm. I didn't want to take I remember she was I think she'd be about six,
okay,
and she's like they grew up with me in the recording studio and then getting in front of microphones and me recording stuff and then all that kind of stuff, and I never made that off limits to them,
right?
And so she's like, I want to record a song for grandmother, she called her Mimie, and I said, okay. And so I said, you just stand right here and you just say whatever you want to say about your song, and then you just sing to Mimie. She goes, okay. And she goes, hi, Mimie, this is a song for you. twinkle, twinkle, little star. And so she just sang it. She had all this confidence.
Yeah.
No fear of recording.
Yeah.
The microphone wasn't intimidating for her. And then fast forward a couple of years, once she heard herself recorded, all of a sudden she got fearful because that recorded sound wasn't what she was hearing in her head.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I do.
It's like, I sound like that.
Yeah.
So like, when I hear the recording of this podcast, I'm like, I don't talk that Southern. Like, yeah, you yeah. do. You do. Really, something happened and she lost that childlike confidence. And so I didn't want to be pushing her to be on the platform until she found that again.
Yeah.
And have that confidence in the Lord, have that confidence in the gifts he's given her, have that confidence in her preparation. So she's got that. My middle son, John, he's on SoundCloud with Christian rap songs that he's producing. They're not like top quality professional yet, but he just started.
Give him two turntables and a microphone.
Yeah, it's like, for him, it's like you think of a song.
Yeah.
You write a song, you make time to record a song, which you finish, mix, and post immediately. That's his thought process, and I look at that and go, my Lord.
Wow.
That's
that actually,
convicting.
That actually kind of exhausted me just as you said that. I thought, man, I'm writing 2 weeks in.
Because I'm goofing around trying to make what I think is some, you know, work of art that'll endure for generations. It's like, Greg, stop.
John's about output.
Take the idea, finish it, record it, put it out. Don't worry about it. You know. So that's what he's doing, and I'm like, oh my Lord. And then little Brian, he's not taking any lessons yet, but he's, you know, played a little guitar, a little piano, and so we'll see.
He'll be the one. It's always the one you least expect.
He's got that lead singer personality.
Yeah. It's always the one you least expect.
I got something to say about gear and tone.
Please, bring it.
People can take this for what it's worth. Some guys don't sound good because they don't sound good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to buy a guitar every year, and they're going to swap out pedals. They need to stop and listen. Sometimes that listening is not just to music, but they need to listen to what other knowledgeable people have to say. Talk to someone in a music store. Ask them about this amp. Ask them about the stuff. Have them demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. Listen, you know, because you get myopic where you're only listening to yourself. You're not listening to others. You're not listening to other recordings. You're not listening to other players. When you go see a show, don't just sit there and think, I could do it better than that guy.
Right, right.
He's doing a gig that I'm not currently doing. What am I hearing that I can learn from that person, and then take that, adopt it. Yeah, study. Open up a recording magazine. See what engineers have to say about guitar tone. Don't just look at it like a guitar player magazine.
Yeah.
See what engineers have to say about getting guitar tone. Read those things. Listen. And
that's good wisdom.
Yeah.
That really is.
I'll take any guitar that you have on the shelf. You hand it to me, and I will tune it without a tuner. And I will make music with it, and it will sound good on this SM58 microphone because you've taken the time to know you've honed
your craft.
Yeah, but some guitars can't have, you know, like if you bring me that 8-string weird looking electric mandolin thingy, I'm not going to try to play a bluegrass song.
Right.
I'm going to do something different with it.
Right.
Each instrument has a voice, and so you're playing the voice that instrument has. And that's part of your voice.
And this is what I have told everybody when I describe who Greg Hagen is. I have always said, Greg plays like a singer sings. And I wish I had a way of and unless you're either a player or a singer, you're not going to get what I'm talking about. But if you are a player or if you're a singer, to sit down and listen to what you do, it's like when it's like your fingers are the air and the strings are the vocal cords. And what you do, because what a singer does with the air in their body against their vocal cords or through their vocal cords, that's what makes the sound. But there's also other things. There's body control. There's posture. There's core strength. There's so many things that go with being. See, again, because I'm right there with you. There are lots of people out there with decent voices, but there are lots of people that don't know how to interpret a song because they don't understand their own body. You understand the guitar the way a singer understands their instrument. And that's, I think that's a really important factor.
I think you might have just schooled me on what is wrong with my singing.
Oh, snap.
Like, well, I think I need to write you a check. Because I was just thinking, I'm hearing you say that and go, okay, wow, there's a lot more to the whole body.
Yeah.
Is involved.
But when it comes to your playing, you understand that there are certain things that have to happen, mm-hmm. not just, like you said, you're watching a player, but you're watching what they're doing and trying to figure out how they do that. Peter Frampton will talk about how when he was a kid, he would literally lay on his speaker to figure out how Robert White would get these chords when he's learning that, when Motown is schooling him. He's like trying to figure out, okay, how's he doing that? And that's a man who's considered by many to be one of the ultimate guitar gods, if you will, in the industry. But also to have him say, you know, this is how I learned. I'm not going to sit there and just try to imitate. I want to dissect it. It gets like to the almost the molecular level.
Yep.
For a great guitar player to become a great guitar player.
One of the basic things you can do is, especially with thinking about lead playing mm-hmm. on guitar, you know, playing single notes and melodies, is use your voice. And if you feel you can't sing as mm-hmm. a guitar player, try. Mm-hmm. You know, in your practice room. And I literally used to do this. So I was just thinking about, as we're talking about the voice, I was thinking about take a song like Matt Redman, 10,000 Reasons. Bless the Lord, oh my soul. Mm-hmm. It's got all those little movements in there.
Yeah.
That you can, different singers will expand those and ornate those differently. And that's the beauty of, you know, singing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just sing that and then try to get your fingers to play that melody just like you're singing. I used to do this all the time. So I'd be like, I'd pick a hymn, Great is thy faithfulness.
Yeah.
That's the way I will sing that line.
Right.
Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. So I would go ping, ping, ping.
Ah.
So I'm like, ooh, I got to bend on the guitar. You have to bend up to that first note so you're ready to bend down.
Gotcha.
Bum, 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 ba-da.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
So I actually worked on that stuff, and I try to tell that to guitar students, and they look at me like I'm weird.
Tell them to listen to George Benson.
George Benson. you hear B.B. King play, you know, his solos. They're rudimentary, but what he's doing is he's pretty much playing the way he sings.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just make it simple.
Yeah.
You know, like expressive.
Yeah.
You know. I've logged many, many hours, and I thought, man, I've got Dan Huff chops. I just need to work. Worked and worked and worked and worked. And there are other guitar players like Scott Henderson with Tribal Tech, fusion mm-hmm. player,
mm-hmm.
ridiculous chops, Paul Gilbert. Racer X, Mr. Big, I mean, just ridiculous chops. And I would try to learn their stuff, and I would get really close, but never quite.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't for lack of trying. And at some point, I realized, and it was right along that failed Margaret Becker audition era,
mm-hmm.
at some point I realized that I wasn't playing like me. I didn't have a way to play, and I was trying to play like Steve Lukather. I'm trying to play like Dan Huff. I'm trying to play like Jimi Hendrix. I'm trying to play like all this stuff. And I realized, yeah, but how do I play? I don't have a way to play, you know?
Wow.
And so I just had to take a step back and just acknowledge there are guys and girls that are just going to have better hands than me.
Yeah.
They're going to play faster.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to play bebop jazz, and I'm not going to be able to ever get to that level. That's just, I don't have those kind of hands.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean I can't make great music.
That's right.
So be technically proficient, but just recognize at some point, you just got to be realistic and make music.
Yeah, and let that person you admire influence you, and don't feel like you've fallen short mm-hmm. if you cannot imitate. I would rather hear you play you with a little sprinkling of, oh, he's been listening to Hendrix, or oh, he's been listening to the Clapton, or oh, he's been listening to that some Jeff. He just threw some Jeff Beck in there. Oh, now I would love that. I appreciate more. than somebody that just does a flat-out imitation of another player.
Keith Urban has been a big influence on me
okay.
in coming into country music, just because mm-hmm. the way he plays and the way he performs.
Yeah.
He is an amalgamation of blues, rock, and mm-hmm. country. And he does it with this joyful, like, almost like there's stuff coming out of the guitar that he kind of didn't expect.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's brilliant.
It's awesome to watch it.
Yeah.
It's like he's playing, I know what I'm doing. Oh, and then that. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, it's like he's a...
who knew I could do that?
It's like he's a fan as he's playing, but it's more of a fan of the music and the experience
yeah.
and the crowd and the guitar. You know, John Mayer, it's like there's guitar players that will knock John Mayer because like I love those licks back when I heard Clapton do it. It's like, well, I didn't grow up hearing Clapton.
Yeah, not everybody did.
You know what I'm saying? So,
not everybody.
Yeah, I've listened to some of those same guys, but here's a young man that brought the guitar back
yeah.
as a voice in
yeah.
pop music when it was pretty much all but gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, you can take a solo again
because
mm-hmm. of John Mayer. You can have a trio and go jam and play some blues because of John Mayer.
Thanks, John. And yeah. and we like your lyrics. You're not too yeah. not too shabby.
So it's kind of like, you know, you just have to. That's the other thing I say about tone and about being a guitar player is,
mm-hmm.
if people stop treating this thing like it's a sport, I think we'd all be a lot better off.
Oh dang!
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
It's like, come on, man. We are making music, so yes, you can. If you can shred the Dan Huff solo, great.
Yeah.
But your chink chink is a part of making music. And that's what's needed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you can see that and embrace that, it's about the collective expression, you know? And even when it's just a solo piece, it's still not just you.
Yeah.
It's you and the audience, or it's you and the potential audience if you're writing.
Yeah.
So it's just always think about it's communal.
Yeah.
And don't think about it like it's competition, you know?
Music
is communal. Yeah. It's not a competition.
Hopefully we're going to come out of that season real soon, but...
No one wants to hear that because yeah. you got The Voice, you
yeah,
got
that's,
American Idol,
yeah.
where you're competing,
yeah.
and you're being judged on mechanics and presentation, and that's all good, but...
You learn the beauty of generosity mm-hmm. when you're on stage with different types of artists. You either learn how not to do stuff, or you learn, oh, that's I wanna follow that path. I want to be that type of musician.
I did Crossroads, show Crossroads
in yeah.
a little big town with Lindsey Buckingham. And so here I am about to share, and Lindsey Buckingham was not an early influence of mine, but once I got into country music and being with Little Big Town,
mm-hmm.
they were so into Fleetwood Mac
yes.
that I just kept gravitating towards
yeah.
so many. And so I just had a new appreciation for Lindsey Buckingham. So mm-hmm. here I am going to do a show with him. And so I'm playing rhythm guitar on Fleetwood Mac songs with Lindsey Buckingham, about to be Lindsey Buckingham. And then on some Little Big Town songs, he's going to play with us, and he's going to take my solos instead
yeah.
of the solos that I take.
Right.
And I did not like that at
okay,
all.
Okay, I get it.
So like, you know, if you think Greg's all just humility, no. So here's me, side guy for some mid-level country act,
yeah.
and I'm getting inwardly irritated that Lindsey Buckingham is going to play a couple of my solos.
Wah-wah.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that when because Joan Osborne did the Standing in the Shadows of Motown mm-hmm. DVD with the Funk Brothers, so whenever she'd come on the road with us, she had all my solos. I basically mm-hmm. did, like, you know, maybe two or three songs. Joan had the other. I had like two songs, because there were three other singers, or two other singers, and so Joan would come on with us, and it just so happened that they didn't get a break. I'm so lazy, I'm like, I only gotta do two songs tonight.
Yeah.
That's how I was living, like, Joan, yeah, baby, come on. You wanna do another one? You wanna do some Diana Ross?
Well, I found with Lindsey Buckingham over the course of the rehearsal and the show that by being generous with him,
yeah,
he was also generous with me.
Yeah.
Which is weird. There's no reason for him to be
yeah.
musically generous with me at all. I found him to be quite humble
mm-hmm.
about what he does. I found him to be actually, I could detect nervousness.
Yeah.
Because
oh.
he hadn't done this in a while
okay.
with the group.
Yeah. He was out of his element, I would imagine.
He came in with certainly a rock star persona, but not in arrogance, mm-hmm. more just in like, I'm here now, we can start.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's yeah.
It was like, okay, it's ready to go. And I just, and so by the in between run-throughs of the show, he came over. I mean, we'd already talked and kind of worked out a couple parts, but a very brief conversation. But he came over to me. He's like, man, what are you doing back here? He's like, just some of these tones you're getting are just fabulous. So no one hears this conversation, but
yeah,
it's
yeah.
a conversation. And I'm just thinking, like, he is a master at creating tones mm-hmm, and parts mm-hmm, and stacking mm-hmm. things up.
Yeah.
And I'm doing, like on the song Dreams, you know, he's doing the main part, but
yeah.
I'm doing a lot of atmospheric stuff that
yeah.
he actually did on the record.
Yeah.
It's kind of buried. I'm just doing all, and he's hearing all that, and he's complimenting me, and he's asking me how I'm doing it. And I'm going, this is surreal.
Yeah.
But it didn't come from, I didn't get that moment and that compliment by being competitive and mm-hmm. by staying in that place of being angry that he was taking my solo.
Absolutely.
I got there by being generous and realizing we're making music today. Number one, he's Lindsey Buckingham and I'm not.
And it comes back to you.
Yeah. It just came back. So when I make comments, you know, today like that, that's, you know, it's stuff I've had to actually live through and do, you know.
Well, sweetie, let's go into the more laid-back part of our time together. This is, as I've called it on many occasions, my audio Rorschach test. There's nothing, we do not need to go into, like, deep analysis on these questions. You just either get this or that, and we
gotcha.
Call it take your pick.
Take
Are
your
you
pick.
Ready? Okay, so number one, Beatles or Stones?
Beatles.
Number two, when it comes to amps, Fenders or Marshalls?
Marshalls.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Well done. Strings, 10s or 11s?
10s.
Okay. Mark Knopfler or Eric Clapton?
Eric Clapton.
Ibanez or Epiphone?
Come on. B.B. King. John Lee Hooker.
Okay, this is probably one of the more pivotal questions, one of the deeper questions. Toilet paper, over or under?
Can I give a long answer? Because I think there are merits to both.
Okay.
The under provides for an easy tear off.
This is true.
However, it can sometimes whip around backwards on you. Now you're reaching and trying to get the end of it again.
Okay.
All things considered, over is probably best.
All right. So when it comes to toothpaste, squeeze from the bottom or squeeze from the middle?
Hybrid approach. Squeeze from the middle, but then at a certain point recognize you're needing to up the product to the top, so you start squeezing from the bottom.
It's so good. Water or soda?
Oh, water.
Milky, I'm sorry, Minnie Mouse or Bugs Bunny?
Bugs Bunny.
Studio or live?
Oh, man, I will get no session work from this comment. Live.
In the moment, I love it. 4 a.m., get up or go to bed?
Get up.
Read the book or wait for the movie?
Oh, man. If it's the Bible, read the book.
I was just going to say, man, Bible is not included because we all know how that goes.
Because that mug, if you're waiting for the movie in the Bible, that mug's going to be underfunded. I'm going to have like one good actor in it, and the script's going to be a hack job. It's probably written by an atheist because that's the only people that can write good screenplays evidently.
And it'll be totally wrong.
Completely wrong. But with... you know, with other books, though, like, I don't read a lot of fiction,
mm-hmm.
So I would almost say wait for the movie.
Okay.
Because you know, it's like Lord of the Rings. I tried to read that. I love that movie, but man,
Tolkien is just too.
Yeah. I start reading, I'm like, oh God, help me! Literally telling me why he didn't write the book first, or what the book doesn't mean. I haven't even gotten out of the introduction yet. And he's talking to me about languages. I can't deal with this. But meanwhile, my wife and my daughter, they've ripped through that thing probably 8 times in the last 4 years.
I was going to say, Ash is your writer. She's your literary gal, man. I tell you, she'd be reading the book. She wouldn't be waiting for the movie. And finally, favorite road trip song?
Road trip song?
What's a good song for cruising?
When my family will let me play music in the car.
Right.
Because with the little kids, it disturbs them with their little ear pod world, and then with Ashley it just disturbs her in general. She wants quiet, and it's like, what, this is not a road trip. So if it's just me and I can do whatever I want,
yeah.
Favorite road trip song, it's been so long since I've been allowed to do that. It would probably be like at nighttime,
mm-hmm.
some Bryan Adams.
Nice.
In the daytime, it would probably be something like grab a police record and just play it start to finish. You know, and just kind of really key in on the songs that weren't hits, but
yeah,
kind of how cool. And
so, what's your okay? So now you've really snagged something. What's your favorite Police record? Can you tell me
the first one? Outlands Do More.
Outlands Do More. Mm-hmm.
It just was so like it, the songs are so cool mm-hmm. on it, you know, and it felt to me the most like a band,
mm-hmm.
and then just to my ears, the more into their records you get, the more it starts to feel like they really were going three different directions.
Oh. Well, honey, this is it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming
in. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, NashvilleGuitarStore.com. It's been a pleasure.
Dedicated to bringing you inspiration, education, and behind-the-scenes stories from prominent guitarists and others influential in the music profession. To hear more, subscribe to the Nashville Guitar Store podcast in iTunes. Go to NashvilleGuitarStore.com or find us on Facebook and Instagram.